Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
All right, we're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. If you guys have questions for John, text them in. 710-710 is our text line. We'll be talking to Keenan Middleton around 4:15 or so. So we've got a shorter amount of time with the professor, but I'm sure he'll be just as dazzling in this amount of time as he is when it's extended. Right, John?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What's the big news? What's come across your desk today that made you go, whoa, I didn't see that coming?
Sheldon Richardson getting cut.
11. I was more surprised he was making $11 million.
Oh no, no! You knew he got big money. I mean, what was making about $9 million here when he was in Seattle, and then went back and got the good deal from Cleveland. And so, yeah, I mean, but again, it's another example of a guy in his 30s that is making over $10 million a year. And what happens? They get the Clowney deal done, Jadeveon Clowney for $8 million, and they decide, okay, hey Sheldon, we need you to take a pay cut. And I don't know what they're offering on the pay cut, but he said no. And so then they said, okay, you're out the door, and now we'll see. But I'd have to think, I don't know how low his monetary interest is going to be, but I'd have to think if I'm Seattle, I make a call.
Yeah. John, if you were a GM, a guy like Sheldon Richardson, I'm going to look at him, 3.5 sacks, 8 sacks is the best year he's had.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I just, as a rule, would probably have... I'm not paying the inside guys that much. I just think it's more about the defensive ends, the guys on the edge, a D-tackle. Unless you get a Cortez Kennedy or an Aaron Donald, I would not spend money there. How about you?
I disagree because, again, where the game's getting different right now is that, because the ends have to do the chasing of the quarterbacks outside the pocket, it gives more of a chance for defensive tackles to get sacks. And if you have a good defensive tackle that can get sacks, I think he's valuable. Now, is he as valuable as a defensive end who gets the sacks? No. But I think he still gets value. I mean, where you can get over $10 million. I mean, you're probably not going to, unless you're like Chris Jones or unless you're Fletcher Cox, you're not going to get the $18 to $22 million. But no, I still think, it's a game right now because, say what you want, defensive tackles are closer to the quarterback for the most part because, quarterback goes one side, the defensive end's left alone there. But defensive tackle has a faster way to be able to get there if he can beat the guy at the line of scrimmage.
Hey, John, you said if you were the Seahawks, you'd make a call.
Yeah.
Do you feel like defensive tackle is a need for this team right now?
No, I think what it is just, okay, you think about how thin they are right now. I mean, you've got Puna Ford, you got Brian Monet, not too much more, but I think they can use one more tackle if they can get him at the right price. I'll tell you another one intrigues me, too. He just got cut by the Las Vegas Raiders, Maurice Hurst. And I would have to think that, you can probably get him at pretty close to the minimum after he got cut. He won't even be at the minimum. He'll be at 920 because, one of the reasons that he and Alder Keys got cut is that their draft choices from 2018, they got the escalator, and the escalator took it up to $2,183,000. And so, you can see that he's got ability to get some pressure. And again, not necessarily that, he will be a starter, but I think that, he could help out.
Hey, John, it looks like Atlanta is going to be one of these teams that's kind of split. And, I wonder if that's a good thing for the teams, where – the voluntary workouts. Some guys are going, some aren't, and I wonder if that can create kind of a little bit of a rift with some of the players, and how do you see that playing out? How do you think that, are they going to standardize it at one point, or is it just going to be guys trickling in here and there?
Well, I mean, I think that it's going to cause some problems, because if you have the older veterans on the team pushing the idea we want team continuity, we want to all stay out, and you have guys starting to break forward, I think there is going to be some problems. That's why, I mean, when you start to see some of the things that come from the Players Association, it's like not all the players, but most of the players aren't going to show up, but those who do show up are going to be problems. Then you start to wonder, okay, as you get closer to May 17th, are other guys going to show up? And so, yeah, I think that there can be some problems with this.
Again, if you guys have questions for John, you can text him in 710-710. We'll try to get to a couple of your questions before we let him go. Somebody asking if you think Aaron Rodgers can be the full-time host of Jeopardy and still play football. Is he that good that people think he might offered that job?
Yeah, I know Pat. I want to ask Pat. Okay, yeah, he's okay. But I think he can do it because when you think about it,
she's got a bias against him, though.
I know that's true. But the idea is that you tape five shows in one day, and obviously it's a half hour show. So I mean, you can kind of get done in a little less than 3 hours because I'm sure there's a little bit of a break and things like that to get the different people on the set and everything else, but also to change the board and all that stuff. But I guess, because we've seen players, I know what Brandon Marshall was doing this, he would go on, I don't know if it was on Showtime or whatever, every Tuesday, but again, the only issue right now is the fact that, he's going to be flying from Green Bay and getting out to Los Angeles, and, that could be a little bit of a drag, but it can be done as long as, there's going to be certain times when he's going to have to, not do the week because they'll have a Thursday game or they have a Monday game or something like that. But it's technical he can do that. But there's been other guys that have played. I think, Ralph Minerska did some kind of a game show when he was kicking for the Chargers. And so, yeah, there's a chance, but we'll see.
Hey, John, it sounds like in the Boom Boom room, Aaron Donald, his lawyer, says that there's video that shows he did not commit assault. So sounds like maybe he's off the hook.
Sounds
like
it.
Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, well, what the attorney said, and he showed some of the video, is I guess the guy came over and wanted to hit Aaron Donald with a bottle. And I don't know if I think he did get hit with the bottle, Aaron Donald.
Boy, that was a bad idea by him.
Yeah, and so it was his friends that apparently jumped him. And there's, I guess, some video of Aaron Donald trying to pull the friends off the guy. So we'll see, if the other guys get charged with anything. But, again, it was provoked by a bottle that this guy wanted to take to Aaron Donald.
Hey, John, what do you think happens as far as the pass rushers with this team? Now you've got Alden Smith, you brought back Carlos Dunlap, you signed Hyder, you brought back Benson Mayoa, we got Daryl Taylor, who we haven't even seen yet, Alton Robinson. Is there going to be an odd man out? Would it be Rasheem Green, or them trying to trade somebody?
I think Rasheem Green could be the odd man out because now you've got enough edge rushers, What I'm wondering is L.J. Collier, are they just going to make him a defensive tackle? Could that be a problem? Could that be something they can do? But because you've got seven defensive ends, and normally you like to keep 10 defensive linemen, and you'd like to keep four defensive tackles. So that leaves one over. Green could be the one that might be able to provoke some kind of a fifth-round pick or something like that, either in this year's draft or next year's draft. But the idea is they've kind of gone back to 2013 and 2014 and want a lot of guys on the defensive line so that not many have to play over 50% of the downs. And so in a 17-week season and 17-game season, now what they do is that they can go in there and not overdo it and be fresher for the stretch run and fresher for the playoffs.
Now, John, I think last we talked to you, you were ready to write your mock draft up. How much has yours changed as you go, and update it as we get closer to the draft?
Well, I mean, it's funny because, one of the things I try to pay attention to is I want to stay, in how many guys that have true first-round grades. But you have to have changes because, like, for example, the 49ers, when they traded up to 3, and, are they taking Mac Jones, which I do say that they do. I mean, you still have some issues at 7 and 9 because, Justin Fields could fall down to the Detroit Lions. And also, you can see that maybe Trey Lance may fall down to 9 to Denver. But that tells me that the Patriots will be trading up to get one of those two guys at 7 or 9. But the one thing that hasn't changed too much, well, one thing that did change, like, for example, I had Michael Parsons from Penn State, the linebacker, going to Detroit at 7. But, he looks like he's dropping a little bit. But then I have him going to the New York Giants at number 11. But the amazing part is, in my first 10, I only have one defensive player, and that's going to be a cornerback that goes, and that's going to go to the Dallas Cowboys.
Hey, John, we appreciate it. Have a great show this weekend. We will talk to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light Made to Chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. All right, now joining us from down on the field, we can see him. We can see him. We're waving at him right now. He's down there in the dugout. Mariners reliever Keenan Middleton is with us. Keenan, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. I could you think of a better day to play baseball? Is this not perfect?
I was just saying.
He's my favorite, baby!
I was just about to say, how about this weather?
Uh-oh. Who's that? Is that J.P. Crawford?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my hype man.
Yeah, a perfect day to beat a team like the Astros. And you haven't been here, but the Astros, I don't know if you're aware, have been a problem for the Mariners, whether the Astros are losing 100 games a season or winning 100 games. This has been a tough team for them to beat. Has that been a conversation at all amongst you guys?
Yeah, for sure. They're definitely the team to beat for many different reasons. I've been in this division as well, so I've been seeing what they've been doing. Just I'm glad to be above them, and I'm trying to keep it that way.
Keenan, you grew up in Oregon, down in Portland area, Milwaukee High School. I played football in college with a guy from Milwaukee High School, or a high school in Milwaukee. But does it kind of feel like you're coming home? You like it up here in the great Northwest?
Absolutely. It feels exactly like home. I mean, every time, even when I was with the Angels, I came up here, it felt like a home game because all my family, all my friends come up here. So now it just makes it a lot easier for them to come up here. And then me fitting in with this group, it feels so much like home.
Hey, how much different has it been just having – I know the ballparks aren't packed. They're only allowing 9,000 fans. But just having actual fans rather than cardboard cutouts has got to be a major difference.
Absolutely, yeah. Even on the road, that stuff's fun. You know, I like to talk and interact with the fans and keep this alive. And like you said, the cutouts was different. I like having guys in the stands.
Well, I think, Keenan, that we may hear some heckling for this team that's coming in here.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, as a pitcher, I mean, we talked to Marco Gonzalez about this. I mean, I'm not expecting them to get thrown at or anything like that, but we're trying to think of if there's a bigger secret in all of pro sports than what pitch is coming next. And when you start messing around with that, then, you know, that really hurts the pitchers. What's sort of your general reaction been to the Astros and what they did?
I mean, even when all that stuff was going on over there in Anaheim, we knew something was up. We were changing signs, but we just weren't doing it enough. And I think that's really the only thing you can do is be out there changing your signs and giving them a different look.
It seems like, and listen, as a baseball fan, I really dislike this team a lot because of that, because they won a title with it. I know baseball has accepted forms of cheating, if you will, if a runner's standing on second and he's able to peer in and see what the catcher's throwing down. It's sort of acknowledged that that goes on and different aspects of that. But this took it to a new level where it seemed like other players were public about their dissatisfaction with it. Normally you don't hear players call out another team, but this was completely different, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I fully grasped that when Mike Trout spoke up about it, because over there, really, Trouty doesn't say much about anything, really. And even he came out and said, all right, what if I knew a pitch was coming? Then it really opened your eyes and like, oh, wow. Then these guys can really do some damage doing that. So, I mean, it's definitely not safe for us out there as pitchers, too, them knowing what's coming. Thank God nobody got hurt that year. But, yeah, that's definitely a scary, weird thing. Can't be happening in our game.
Hey, Keenan, we heard all your boys going by there and giving you a hard time. They see you're on the microphone, so they got to yell things at you. I know. That's good stuff. Seems like a fun team, man. When you guys are on the road and probably a little bit more this year, you're able to be around each other more. Tell us about kind of who are some of the knuckleheads on this team, the funny guys, the personalities. It seems like a cool young group.
Yeah, it's definitely a special group. And that was one thing that I noticed even before I even got to be in the clubhouse with these guys. The way they reached out to me when I signed and stuff. These are a bunch of fun personalities. I think Kyle Seager definitely surprised me the most. He's probably the most sarcastic person I've ever met in my entire life. He's hilarious, man. He wears the pitchers out all day long, as he should. We kind of just sit here all day. But I love this team, man. It's a young team, a lot of energy. And that's what I was so excited about coming over here, is just to contribute with my energy and my skill set and fit in with this really tight and really good group.
How much fun is it to be sitting here and talking about the Mariners being in first place? I know it's very early and people always say, it's only a couple, it's 13 game, big deal. It is a big deal. You just said it. It's a really young team. It's got to feel great.
Absolutely, especially the games that we've played, coming back and winning some of those games. Our MO in the bullpen is just to try to hold the lead and put up zeros, because with this team, like we've seen this year, we can put up as many runs as we can whenever.
Hey, Keenan, did you play any other sports in high school?
Yes, I played football and basketball, too.
Really? What what position you play in football?
I was a safety, mainly. I just played football to hit people. Basketball, I was a guard. Yeah, football, I was a safety. I had to play quarterback sometimes when people got hurt, but I really didn't like doing that.
So you like hitting people, so you probably take a lot of that aggression out there to the mound.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's my fire. I like competing. I grew up a basketball player first, so it's like, I don't know. If you hit a three on somebody, you get an and one, you dunk on somebody, you let them know. That's exactly what I do on the mound.
You saying you like hitting people just made you Dave Wyman's favorite player ever. He appreciates that about you.
Absolutely. At least I'm somebody's favorite.
Yeah. Keenan Middleton is with us here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. They get set to take on the Astros in Game 1 tonight. As far as do you set any individual goals for yourself when you, especially coming into a new situation? I don't know, do you put numbers out? Hey, I want to have an ERA here. I want this many strikeouts to walk ratio or anything like that?
No, obviously I try to keep the walks down, I think me and every other pitcher. But this year was a lot about, last year I worried about a lot of things that were out of my control. So coming into this year, I didn't know my role. So I just said, I'm going to fit in and I'm going to go in, and whenever I get the ball, I'm going to put up a zero. And that's my MO this season.
Hey, Keenan, you know, it's funny. We sit around here and talk about how this is a young team and we don't expect them to win this year. Totally different perspective in the locker room, you guys. I mean, you know, that's the sort of narrative that's going along with this team. But you guys are competitors. I really like the way that you guys have been winning games, too, extra inning games. I mean, for a young team, it seems like you guys are playing veteran ball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is the group that we have together. We're so tight that we're always going to be together. We're never going to stop fighting. This is a group that since spring, we heard that we had like 1.7% chance in some dumb hole to make the playoffs. I was like, that is the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen in my life. Because I looked around the locker room the first day I was in there, and it looked like a really good group, even the young guys that aren't here. So, yeah, I know I have a chip on my shoulder with that, and I'm trying to stay in this number one spot and keep it that way.
Hey, give me a thought on some of the new rules we've seen here. And you, this is a safe place. Nobody's listening. You'll be fine. But honestly, starting extra innings with...
Oh, microphone went out. Yeah, starting extra innings, Keenan, we're not a big fan of the putting a guy on second base. What do you think about that one?
When I go out there and there's a guy on second base to start the inning, I would rather stub my toe on the door and look back there and see a guy I didn't even put on, anybody put on the bases back then. So I think that one, I hate that one the most, just having to pitch through that situation. But both teams had to do it, so can't complain too much.
Yeah. How about the seven-inning doubleheader, though? That seemed okay to me, but how'd that sit with you?
Seven-inning doubleheader, I'm cool with that because we have limited bullpen arms, and so we can't just run out two full nine-inning games, I don't think, of that. So I think seven innings, that can stay, but the runner on second, can go.
You know, Keenan, one of the things I've always loved is the relationship between the pitchers and the catchers. And the catchers are there to, you know, we were talking about when Paxton got hurt the other day, how I think it was Luis Torrens, you know, knew right away.
Yeah.
You know, that's a special relationship that you have. Tell us a little bit about your catchers.
Our catchers are special. LT is a guy who he bangs, and like you said, behind the plate, he's very good at intelligence. And Murph is a guy who's, I think he takes to heart the work that we do sometimes more than we do, you know? And I like that. I like that about him a lot. During the start of spring, I was having a rough spring, and we kind of just sat down and talked about this is where all my success comes from. And we had a detailed talk, and ever since then, things have been going great. So Murph's a guy who's always going to be on the same page as you, and he's going to make sure of it. We're always having conversations. He's always in your ear.
Hey, Keenan, my mic battery went out, so I didn't hear your response to the runner on second, but I'm going to assume you think it's hokey nonsense like we think, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good. Hey, I read about one other one that they're trying, it might be an independent league or in the minor league somewhere, of moving the mound back a foot to 61 feet, 6 inches. What would that, if that was something that happened, what would that do to your game? How would you approach something like that?
I don't even know. I've never done that before, so I'll definitely have to make the adjustment. But, I mean, they want us to throw them a beach ball in there, too. What else? You want a bigger ball? You want a bigger bat?
They want you to go underhand.
They want a whole tennis racket? What do they want?
See, you know, I like that you're already kind of a grumpy old man about that, man. I'm the same way, like, with football, you know. It's like all of the – they want scoring, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the MLB wants. That's what NFL wants. And it's always the defensive guys and the pitchers that take it in the shorts on those things.
Yeah, just tell them to watch our guys. Let's go play the runs.
Yeah, I like the idea of the beach ball. Just lob a beach ball up to him. We'll get all the offense you want.
I think that's our best shot for these hitters to stop crying.
How are you with the bat, by the way? Usually pitchers who come up in the big leagues were usually the best players on their teams, and they were great hitters, and then you don't get much of an opportunity. If you had a chance to go up there, how do you think you'd do?
You know, I'm taking my hacks. I'm going to be up there swinging for sure. But it's a lot harder. It's probably going to be a lot more firm than the 82-mile-an-hour lollipops I was seeing from kids in Oregon high school baseball.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We always go, well, what about pitchers being up there? Wouldn't they have an advantage because you're a pitcher yourself? You got insight maybe? Is that the case? Or is it just more about not having practice?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be about not having practice. I'm going to go in there with full confidence, though, that's for sure. I'm going to be swinging.
Well, Keenan, man, it is really fun to talk to you. We really appreciate you taking the time with us. Congrats on the start to the season, and hopefully you guys beat the daylights out of these cheating sons of guns, the
Astros.
Keenan, we got to get you back on, man. Our fans love you. They're texting in. They love you. They like the grumpy old man mentality.
Heck,
we love
yeah.
it.
Well, tell them to come hang out with me in the bullpen.
Yeah,
we appreciate
go.
It,
thanks,
man.
Keenan.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. There's Keenan Middleton, a reliever for your Seattle Mariners. Fun guy.
Oh, man. I love this guy.
And my batteries went dead right as he was going to answer the question, or I was going to ask the question about the runner on second.
Yeah, he was grumpy about it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I
love it. Love it, man.
I like that. He just waved to us from the dugout. Yeah, what a good dude, man. Like him a lot. All right. Coming up, I brought this up here, and it sounded like he wasn't even aware of it, but MLB is experimenting with some rule changes. We're going to talk about those coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live from T-Mobile Park. It is Wyman and Bob. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company as we watch the Mariners take batting practice out here, and it's interesting to see how different the ball sounds coming off the bat depending on who's in the cage.
Yeah,
right. Ty France was up there, and Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager. Their bat has a certain sound. Then we saw J.P. Crawford get in there, and it's just a different click.
Yeah, but he looks so much cooler, Bob.
He's very cool. He's very cool in what he's doing. But yeah, it's just a little different sound going on there. Meanwhile, we do have Mean Text coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. So if you guys have something you'd like to share with us, 710-710 is the text line to share your Mean Text with us. Feel free to do that. Again, that comes up in the 5 o'clock hour. The one thing we brought up with Keenan Middleton, though, was the proposal about some rule changes. And they always try it out in the lower levels. They're trying this in the Atlantic League. And they are the league, that, by the way, that tried the robot umps.
Oh, yeah.
So starting August 3rd, they're going to move the pitching rubber back 1 foot. So it'll be, instead of 60 feet 6 inches, 61 feet 6 inches is what they're going to go. All in an attempt to bring in more offense.
The Atlantic League.
Yeah.
What level is this? Do we know?
No, it's lower level. It's where it doesn't matter.
It's not even a. Anyway, yeah.
And also one more, the double hook is what they're calling it. So if the team will lose a DH when they pull their starting pitcher. So that's to keep pitchers in longer in the games instead of, you know, we've really gotten into these, hey, give us five and we're gonna work with our specialists in there and just keep bringing in pitcher after pitcher rather than letting these guys go a little longer. So you got one rule in an attempt to increase the offense, another rule to get pitchers to stay in the game a bit longer.
Okay. I got to say, I love the drama that comes along with the home plate umpire. So you can't take that away.
You love complaining about the umpire.
I like that, and I also like the other day, I mean, that whole thing when they gave the warning and then service gets tossed.
Yeah.
Which was a ridiculous warning. because it was a changeup that hit the guy, and they were saying that it was retribution or whatever.
They put the tying run on first base.
Yeah,
it was dumb.
They would never do that. So, but yeah, that was a lot of good drama. And then, you know, also Ty France hitting the deck a couple times there. Yeah. It would look like, you know, I thought, oh man, maybe we're going to get a fight. That kind of drama I like, and it's worth it to have, you know, the human error and everything. Plus, you know, it's like they were talking about eliminating the kickoff. You know, what do we always say in football? It's, you know, kickoffs at 1 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Well, what is the umpire? He comes out and says, play ball. I mean, you're going to have a robot out there. You won't get that anymore. So and then plays at the plate and everything. I don't know how they were going to handle that. I guess that, you know, the guy behind the plate just wasn't going to call any strikes and balls.
Yeah, nobody's losing
their
job.
There.
Yeah. Nobody's losing a job. It would be you're just taking that element off their plate, but they're still, you know, fair or foul. Did it hit the batter? They're making every other call that a normal ump would make other than balls and strikes.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like football where, you know, they're trying to make it perfect. But, you know, there's a lot of imperfections. And I think the imperfections are what makes it, you know, an interesting game. So, yeah, especially with called balls and strikes. So, yeah, I don't – the other thing, too, I think a lot of times people will change things just to change them. It's like, oh, what are we going to do this offseason? You know, how are we going to improve the game? And, you know, if it really truly improves the game, do you think it really truly improves the game? I mean, putting a runner on second base, does that improve the game? I say you kill to go to a game where – it's extra innings. Extra innings is fantastic. Why you want to try to speed through it?
I agree with you, but they're trying to appeal to fans that say baseball's boring or it takes too long, or you know what? There's not enough going on to hold the attention of the younger fans. So these are all moves made in an attempt to A, speed up the game, B, increase the offense and the action.
Yeah.
So the seven. Again, I don't love seven-inning doubleheader. I wish they were nine-inning doubleheaders. But I can come to terms with that one easier than I can the runner on second, which just is so gimmicky. It just is. And we heard Keenan Middleton. He's not a fan of it, certainly. And then he's the idea about pushing the mound back a foot. I'd love to hear from different pitchers. Like, what would that do, especially to somebody who's a soft tosser like Marco? Is his average fastball then going to be, you know, around 87? Is it going to knock a few miles an hour off everybody's fastball by the time it gets up to the plate? How much of a difference does it make in everybody's routine or what they do? 1 foot. Maybe it's not as big a deal as we think. Maybe it's massive.
Yeah, why is it 1 foot? Why isn't it like 6 inches? Why isn't it a foot and a half? I mean, I wondered if they did experiments and saw that you incrementally went, you know, batting averages went up, but not too far or something. Who knows? But now, yeah, I can. I love that Keenan Middleton's 27 years old, and he's already a grumpy old man. But no, I liked what he had to say. He was very frank and upfront and honest with us. And yeah, I'm sure if you're a pitcher, you got lots of complaints. They're always trying to make for better offense. You know, it's the same thing of like being a defensive player in the NFL. It's like they just want
everybody's
more scoring.
Against you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and it just does that speak to the youth? They don't appreciate solid defense or a 1-0 pitching duel. They want to be dazzled and entertained by look at the ball fly, look at it leave the stadium, look how far it went.
Yeah, because they're used to watching video games, right?
Maybe it is. I don't know, but it's the same. It's sort of the same approach in football. They want to see, you know, they want to see the offense marching down the field or long bombs or just more scoring. And you know, theirs is more on the safety element. Rather than increasing scoring, they're more about safety, I guess, and hampering what the defense does. But in baseball, it's about increasing the action because that seems to be the popular complaint for people that didn't grow up with the game. It's too slow. There's not enough going on.
Yeah. Well, we just think the young people are distracted now and they have short attention spans and we need to keep them. By the way, when he was saying the thing about the beach ball, I used to say that about Altuve.
Yeah,
I was like, of course he's a great hitter. The ball looks like a volleyball coming across because he's 5'5". I mean,
it looks like a softball to him.
Doesn't it stand to reason?
Yeah, probably when he holds it in his hand, it feels like a softball compared to somebody else who, it's a baseball, man.
I love the smaller players. I always have. And it's funny, like a guy like Doug Baldwin, a guy like my favorite all time was Sam Mills, the late Sam Mills.
Linebacker.
He's like 5'9". They called him the field mouse.
You never bring up London Fletcher. I think he was 5'9".
Fletcher was good. Was he that?
I think he was.
He played
5'9".
With Washington.
He was with the Rams originally, I think, and then went to Washington.
And he's also from like a really small school.
Yeah, I don't
believe.
I don't know where he went to school, but he was a pretty undersized. I don't know if they listed him at 5'10". I recall standing next to him at one point, and whatever he was listed at, I was going, no, that's not right. There's no way.
Well, I'm looking it up right now, but I know that he's listed. Yeah, 5'10". He went to John Carroll. That
I don't know that I've ever heard of John Carroll.
Yeah, and I have talked about him quite a bit, and maybe I'll start bringing him up. But he's kind of built like Devin White. I mean, Devin White's like 6 feet tall, but it's just it's always impressive to me that when you see guys that are smaller and in stature, and they don't have the strength and the size to rely on. And, you know, a guy like Jose Altuve, I know we all hate him right now, but the fact that he's 5'6" and able to get it done in Major League Baseball.
He's not 5'6". He's probably 5'4.5".
Yeah. I like when they have him standing next to, like, Aaron Judge on base.
He looks trial size. That's what he looks like. All right, coming up, we're going to speak to the best color analyst in the business. Mike Blowers will join us next live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We are live from T-Mobile Park with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. And it is a pleasure to bring into the booth with us the best color analyst in the business, the one, the only Mike Blowers is here. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Good to see you guys out at the ballpark.
It's good to be. Could you have a better day?
No, it's awesome.
This is the best.
Yeah.
Does this make you miss being out there as a player? Or are you?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, my knee hurts. My back hurts. My elbow shot. Yeah, no, I'm good.
Hey, we were talking about, obviously, with the Astros in town, the conversation centers around what's gone on with them, with the whole sign stealing and all that.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out, is there a bigger advantage in any other sport in knowing what the opposition is doing? Like in football, if you knew what play was coming, how much you still have 11 guys that have to work in concert to battle that play. And in basketball, you kind of know. Like we talked about the Jazz, you knew the pick and roll was coming. You knew what was coming. If you as a hitter knowing, hey, here comes the fastball or here comes the curveball, what kind of advantage is that?
It's huge. I mean, these guys are already the best hitters on the planet. And then you're going to tell them what they're going to get. And you know, for me, I think so much of it is, especially if you're struggling, you have to commit to something. And if I go into a game and, you know, I've been struggling for 3 or 4 days, I'm like, okay, today I'm just going to hit the fastball. That's it. That's all I'm going to do. Unless you tell me that you're going to throw a curveball first pitch. And typically when they do that, it's just kind of a get-over curveball, and that thing's going to get waffled. You know, and I agree. I listened to you guys, your interview with Middleton, and I was driving in. And he's absolutely right. You know, the main thing for me is one thing, it's cheating and it's games and it's these guys' livelihood, but it's also the dude that's out there 60 feet away and all of a sudden you're hitting rockets back at him and he can't protect himself. That I think it's pretty dangerous too. So I thought he made a good point on that I hadn't really thought about.
Yeah. What did you think of Keenan? He's kind
awesome.
Of
all these guys are great, man.
He's kind of a grumpy old man. I like that.
I did too. About him. I loved it.
Yeah. The personalities on this team, I mean, he's 27 years old.
I like that he called Kyle out too. Yeah. It's absolutely the truth.
Yeah. Is that right? I would have never pegged Kyle for that kind of guy.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
He's kind of guarded in the media.
Yeah.
So he's kind of the wise guy, huh?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. What,
he gives
right
pitchers
sense of humor all the time. The pitchers and broadcasters too, for that matter.
we were talking about Kyle earlier in the show, and say it feels like the assumption is, well, this will be his final year with the team. And, you know, they're going to move on. And almost the same with Haniger. If Haniger gets hot, he's going to be great. Trade bait. You know, you've got all these prospects coming up in the outfield. There's no room. But we're watching both these guys right now going, I don't want him to get rid of either one. And Kyle in particular, there is no young third baseman that I'm aware of.
There's not an answer in the organization right now. Maybe in a few years, but not anytime soon that I know of.
So the idea of bringing him back next year is appealing to me. How would you feel about that?
I think it depends on where this team is at. And right now they're doing well. Right? They're off to a pretty good start. But Jerry's going to have to figure out how close are these guys to really competing at the end of the year. Take a look at what this season looks like to them. And if they're closer, then I think it makes it more attractive to keep him. And you might have to make that assessment at the All-Star break. I don't think so with Kyle. You might have to make that decision with Haniger, though.
You know, Kyle's probably underappreciated by everybody except you. You know, I mean, being around the team and everything, it seemed like we didn't talk about him in the off season because it's all about the youth and everything.
Sure.
But he comes out, gets the hot start, and you start to see the leadership. You'll hear the stories like what Keenan Middleton said about him, you know, just kind of bonds. He's kind of a glue guy. And then you look at his numbers, Mike. As far as in the history of this franchise, they're fantastic numbers with some really good players.
Very good players, and he's right there at the top. He's top five across the board in just about everything.
Right.
And when you start looking at the guys that are ahead of him, you're talking about some Hall of Famers in there. I think the one thing with Kyle that you miss with him that people don't, I guess, really understand about him is, one, he shows up every day to play, every single day. It's rare for him to be hurt. And he goes out there banged up, trust me. I've seen him. I've talked to him. I know what's going on with him. He prefer us not to talk about it, but he goes there every single day. And I think he had one year, I can't remember what it was, a few years ago, where he had kind of a down year, a dip for him defensively. But outside of that, people are going to miss him in the field. I guarantee you that. He's as good as it gets over there.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think he's a fantastic defensive player. Back to Haniger for a moment, because we were talking about him in the sense that all of your top prospects, for the most part, are outfielders. We're talking about Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and Kyle Lewis coming back, and now you got Trammell out there.
Which, by the way, for me, having been doing this job for a while now in this organization, 15 years, it's nice that you're able to say that.
Yeah, it's very different.
I mean, for the minor league system to be that loaded, it's awesome.
Would you feel comfortable in playing out the hypothetical scenario that Haniger's playing well midseason, there's a team that's really willing to give something up for him? Those are unproven commodities. They may be superstars, but there's a lot of guys that wash out for whatever reason. They just don't make it. We're all assuming that Rodriguez will be a stud, Kelnick will be a stud, Lewis will be a stud. Maybe, I mean,
they will, but we don't know how long that's going to take.
Yeah,
you know, Rodriguez is down the road a little bit further. Kelnick's right there, and Kyle is here, and he's proven it a number of different times what he's capable of doing. So he's somebody that I would say I would take out of that mix. He's going to play center field here for a while.
So would you be comfortable trading Haniger with the uncertainty of what's coming up? You know there's a ton of promise and potential, but it hasn't been proven at this level.
Again, I think that there's a number of things that are involved in that, and I think for somebody like Mitch, because he's a really good player, I mean, you forget because he hasn't been here in almost 2 years. And then all of a sudden, you see what he did on this road trip, and your eyes open up again. Oh, yeah, I forgot. He's an all-star.
We don't want him to go.
Yeah, at one point, you know, he's in the MVP talk. He's top 10 in that. And it's like, whoa, you know, maybe we better rethink this thing. I think, again, guys, this is going to come down. We don't know how this year is going to go. We don't know how it's going to finish. They're off to a good start. They're fun to watch. But at the end of it, it comes down to wins and losses and where our weakness is at and what do we need to do and what are those other guys going to do this year? Where's Kelnick at? He's going to be here at some point this year. How does Rodriguez's year go in the minor leagues? I think that's where he'll probably end up. Maybe September. I don't know. But you have to wait and let it all kind of play out. Now, if you get, you know, to the deadline and some people are calling, which they will be, I think you listen to everything, but I don't know that you just automatically make a decision today, and this is exactly what it's going to be. It's probably where everybody was thinking going into this season, but now that you're getting a chance to watch Mitch, and even though he's not as young as those guys, he's right in the middle of his prime.
Yeah.
You know, he goes out this year, and all of a sudden he's hitting 25, 30 home runs, doing a lot of damage and playing right field as well as anybody with that arm and the way that he can run. Just slow down a little bit, everybody. Let's just wait and see where this goes.
I don't want him to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't go, Mitch.
He's a really good player. He's going to be a good player for a while. I mean, he had some tough situations with some injuries, and they kind of compounded on him, and hopefully he's past that. But I said it when I got to spring training. He looks completely healthy. He's running great. I could not believe how quickly he was able to get his timing back and recognize the breaking ball. Because I know for myself, every year just having the winter off, and even though you're hitting in the cages and you're doing stuff, it takes time. He didn't miss a beat. So the work ethic is there, and that's never going to change for him.
Yeah, he said he never has felt better in his life.
You can see it.
Yeah. As far as Marco, his start, we were kind of worried the other day because it went into the first inning of that game the other day. Mm-hmm. But he's such a competitor. You knew he was going to eventually snap out of it, but you think he doesn't look back after this, or you think that was kind of a turning point for him?
I think it was. I think that he still has a few things that weren't as sharp as I'm used to seeing him, and now I've seen him when he's been elite. I think his backdoor cutter, he still doesn't quite have a feel for that. I was really happy with the way that he was using his changeup more and kind of getting away from his curveball a little bit. That certainly made sense to me, and I love the fact that he was pitching inside. And when he was missing inside, he was missing off the plate. He made a mistake to Mancini in the first inning, and it was a fastball that was right down the middle. That is not like him. He doesn't make that mistake, especially to a cleanup hitter. If he's going to error, it's going to be off the plate and not give them something good hit. So it's kind of surprising to watch him walk, home run, couple of base hits, and then he got out of that inning. And I don't know if I said it, but I was thinking it at the time. Well, okay, now he can go in the dugout, 34 pitches. He needs to regroup and just come out. You know, he's going to get the bottom of the lineup now. It was a little bit easier for him and get his feet on the ground. He absolutely did that and then some. He was really efficient after that. His changeup was better. He started to use his cutter more inside. It's a lot of positives for me out of that. But there's some things that he still – it's not quite all the way there that he'll need against a quality club.
Hey, last thing before we let you go, you said you were listening when we were talking to Keenan, and one of the things we brought up is what they're doing in the Atlantic League. Did you see that about moving the mound back a foot?
Yeah.
And he was saying, well, what do they want us to throw beach balls, use tennis rackets? I mean – What do you think of that? I understand they're trying to appeal to the youth. They're trying to get more scoring. They also have the double hook where a team loses the DH when they pull their starting pitcher in an effort to keep pitchers in there longer. 61 feet, 6 inches, what do you think of that?
No. And I'm a former hitter, right? So I would like to have any advantage I can get, but I don't think you need to start changing the game. Look, there's some things in this game that always evolve and change. They lowered the mound at one point. You know, the baseballs have changed. The bats that these guys are swinging have changed. The gloves for the defenders have changed. The ballparks have changed. So there's change in this game, but what doesn't change? The length of the bases and where that mound is.
Yeah.
The rest of it, have fun with it. You know, work it out. I played in the Kingdom, short porch and right. Had to really hit it to go out to left. That's, you know, it's fine. This ballpark is different than that. That's okay. You know, I'm fine with all that. But moving the mound back a foot, I'm sorry. That changes too much.
What do you think that does to a pitcher?
Well, first of all, think about this. You know, these guys all – the velocity in the game right now is up from more than it's ever been. So the velocity is the velocity, and they can throw a foot back. They're still going to rip it up there, and they're going to be able to throw strikes. It's their breaking ball. It's their changeup. It's their split. They've spent years getting a feel for that pitch, throwing it a certain distance, and now you're going to take that away from them, and now they basically got to start all over. I think it would be really difficult for all of them. And I think that, you know, for me – I have my own solution to it. I think with the velocity that we're seeing today, it is impossible for these guys to consistently hit at the top of the strike zone. I think that when I was playing in the olden days, the strike zone wasn't just under my armpits. It was probably just above the belt.
Right.
Okay? And if you want to lower it lower too, like take that box, just push it down. And then I'm not talking a lot, just a little bit. You give the hitters a better chance. And I think that that's a fairer strike zone. And I think if you do that, then you're going to see these guys be more aggressive early, because that pitch that's at the top of the zone, and we've already seen it this year with the velocity, especially when they played Chicago and some of these other clubs that have those guys that can pitch up and in, you can't touch it. There's nothing that you can do.
He's the best in the business. He is Mike Blowers. He's with us every week, and you hear him every Mariner game. Blow, great stuff, man.
Good to see you guys. Thanks, Mike. Yep, see you.
There you go. We're going to come back. We'll talk about what it's going to take to get you to believe this Mariners team is for real. Also, we'll catch up with Jose Marmolejos as well. All of that coming up as we continue live from T-Mobile Park with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.